So it was raining this morning.
It was raining.
And Sophia, for her birthday a couple weeks ago, was gifted an umbrella that changes color in the rain.
Yeah. That means she insists on using it every time it might rain.
Well, so it was actually raining this time. I mean, she's only had it for like a week because her birthday just happened. So we have not gone through the it might rain or it looks cloudy or anything. Like, it's just been really nice weather.
Yeah.
But this is pouring down rain up until the point that we leave our house. And she's like, I'm going to get to use my umbrella. We pull in. We always drive to the church. And then we walk down to the school because like just a couple blocks down. And so we pull in. The rain stops. All right. Well, welcome back to Beyond Sunday. This is Pastor David. With me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Back from Alaska. Back. From the last frontier. No, wait. That's not the last
that
frontier.
That is the last frontier.
It is a frontier.
It is. Well, their marketing says the last frontier.
Really? So. Wasn't that a Star Trek series, too?
That's the final frontier.
Oh, okay. So last and final.
Not to be confused.
Right. All right.
With the last frontier. Yeah.
This is like Ohio and North Carolina fighting over the birthplace of aviation and
First flight and first in flight.
Right, yeah.
Is what we landed on, I think.
No, it's birthplace of aviation and first in flight.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We're the birthplace.
Because you had the first flight.
No,
but our people were the first in flight.
We're the birthplace because they were born in Ohio.
Okay.
And they did all their work and doesn't matter. Anyway,
yeah,
all right.
Doesn't.
We'll just get Alaska to sue Star Trek and that'll be fun.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it'll make for good news stories for future weeks.
Right.
But Patrick, not with us today. We miss him. We're thinking of him. Mm-hmm. Home with a sick kiddo, hoping that everybody feels better there. But we're gonna carry this one.
Yep.
Which should be an adventure.
It will
if
be.
If nothing
yep.
else, it'll be good.
Especially because it's about the Bible. So you're gonna carry this one.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
If people know anything about me, it's that I have very little problem talking for extended periods of time about something I know very little. So.
It is true. Especially if you don't read the article.
Yeah, it's a gift slash a curse. So, you know, it's all right. We'll get through this. It'll be fun. We're going to dig into a couple different books today. Some of the shorter ones, some wisdom literature, and we'll see what the Bible has in store for us.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff. But first. Dun, da, da, da. This is the big announcement. It is Fat Bear Week.
Fat Bear Week.
Hashtag Fat Bear Week. For those of you who don't know, there is a park
in Alaska.
In Alaska. Were you there? Did you go to this park?
I didn't go to this
park. How could you have been in Alaska? I assume that everywhere in Alaska is really close to each other, which I know is false because Alaska is like bigger than half the United States.
Yeah.
But how could you not have gone?
Well, it was really bad weather for one thing. I like arrived with winter.
You think the bears care?
The bears do care. They hibernate.
Yeah, but the whole point of Fat Bear Week is to get ready for hibernating.
Sure.
All right. Anyway.
But they've already gotten ready, which is the point of Fat Bear Week, is that now they're done.
Oh.
And you judge them on their body weight.
I completely
which is always a positive thing.
Fat shame the bears. Anyway. So Fat Bear Week, apparently the bears are done hype. I thought this was like a judge, or I thought we were judging who was going to eat the most, but we're actually judging who has already.
Who ate the most,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have from this state park in Alaska, and I'm sorry, now I do not see the name of the state park.
Katmai.
Katmai?
Mm-hmm.
All right, there you go. Katmai State Park. And we have contestants. And it's a March Madness-style bracket in which bears go up against one another. No bears are injured. In fact, all bears are just well-fed and get to take a nap.
Right.
But somebody comes out on top as the winner. And so this is happening right
can
now.
Can I enter Fat Bear Week?
Can you enter? Can I be a contestant?
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
My dream.
Just get voted for like eating and sleeping.
Yay! You ate a lot this summer.
All right. So you can go to fatbearweek.org. It'll take you to the website. You can see all the contestants. You can vote for your favorites. I think as of the release date of this podcast, there will still be time to vote. And so you can get in there and vote for your favorites. A few of the contestants, I love this. You can meet the bears. And this is my favorite part. A few of the contestants, we have 32 Chunk. That's my favorite bear name. I think
they all have numbers.
Yeah, they're all given numbers. I think that's like their tag. So there's Chunk. There's Grazer. There's unnamed 131. He's not actually unnamed. It's just 131. Popeye. Otis. He sounds like a charmer. And Spring Club.
Otis's headshot is a little whack.
Yeah?
He's got his mouth open.
Don't judge Otis on his headshot.
Out. Yeah.
I like Chunk a lot. I mean, for one, the name is great.
Mm-hmm.
And Chunk looks battle scarred. He's got a little thing on his nose. So he's
ladies love it.
Battle tested, you know. Yeah. I'm voting for Chunk.
I think Holly is here to clean up, personally.
Yeah? You think Holly's got it?
She's floating on her back in the water.
Who doesn't love a bear floating on her back? Yeah. There's also, you can vote for junior bears. I'm not sure you can vote for them, but you can meet the junior bears as well. Who are like future
They have their own bracket. I think it's next week.
It's like the amateur league.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're still in training. They're not ready for the pros yet.
Junior varsity.
The JV bears.
Okay.
So go to fatbearweek.org. Check that out. Let us know who you vote for. I'm voting for Chunk. Chunk 2022. Nope, 2021. What year are we in?
Still 2021.
Okay, so Chunk 2021 for Fat Bear Week. I'm pulling for you, big guy. I believe in you. And I hope you do it. Do you have a favorite, Elise? Do you have a favorite in Fat Bear Week?
You can't
vote for yourself. I know that that's your choice, but you can.
Holly, and I think Cub is promising. He appears to be completely round, including his face.
That's
an important quality in a fat bear.
That is snuggly.
Yeah.
If you want a fat bear, you want it to be a snuggly fat bear.
Yeah.
You ever found it like fascinating? And actually, there's a whole history, but have you ever found it fascinating that we like cuddle up to teddy bears and things like that?
When
bears want to do is murder you. Yeah, bears would totally destroy you if you like tried to get cuddled. A sheep or something like can only do so much to you. I get cuddling a sheep. I don't really want to. They're smelly, but still. Yeah. But a bear would like destroy you. Yeah. There's a whole history with like Teddy Roosevelt and stuff around bears.
Did he start that?
Kind of. If I remember, I don't remember the whole thing, so I'm now, you know, shooting from the hip, so to speak, with this story. But there's something about he was on a hunting trip because he was a big outdoorsman, started national parks and things like that, was on a hunting trip, wanted to find a bear. They never found a bear. And so somebody like had like a bear that was injured or whatever. And rather than just putting the bear out of the misery, they like tied it to this tree and said, here, Mr. President, you can shoot
this. That's great.
And he was like, no, I'm not going to shoot. Like, there's no sport in that, right?
Because
he's like an outdoorsman.
Right.
It's like, there's no sport in that. I'm not going to shoot this bear. And then somebody wrote a thing about the teddy bear. Mm. And then it became all cuddly. And like that's where like this notion of teddy bears came from.
So a wounded bear tied to a tree.
Yeah.
Started.
Eventually became all cuddly and, you know,
yikes.
Every child's dream.
Yeah.
So what do you want?
It's like, don't read the origin stories of fairy tales.
Just
ruins them.
Yeah. Because the kid always gets eaten in the end. Mm-hmm. You don't want that.
Everybody gets eaten.
Yeah.
It's like a hallmark of a fairy tale.
Kind of like the Book of Ecclesiastes, actually. But hey, before we get there, let's start. So we're going to jump into first some wisdom literature from the Bible. We've done a little bit of wisdom literature before.
Technically Job, right?
Yeah, technically Job. So wisdom literature, I mean, there's all sorts of places that you can like look to and say like, oh yeah, this definitely fits in the category of wisdom literature within scripture. But specifically, we're talking about Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job. And it's important for us to see that those three really are meant to offer a full picture together, that if we're reading any one of those on their own, which is tragically what we usually do.
Yes.
But if we're reading any one of those on their own, we're usually missing the broader picture. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to come away with certain perspectives, as you'll see, we're going to come away with certain perspectives that really are not what we think would be God is pointing us towards.
Yeah.
Which is why I think we get into a lot of trouble with certain aspects, particularly with Proverbs that we're going to get into. Because I think Proverbs is uniquely suited to pick out the ones that you like and say, look, here's this little thing that solves my life or that tells me to do a certain thing. And it's taken completely out of context and we missed that. So just, you know, get some background for the readers. Let's let you share your experience here a little bit. How much time on a weekly basis do you spend in the wisdom literature of the Bible? In a given week.
In a given week.
Or a given year. That's fine.
No, I mean, none.
Yeah,
but
I think that's accurate. Yeah.
To summarize that, I do like Proverbs. Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of if like Ben Franklin wrote the Bible.
Yeah.
Which I have an appreciation for the short, pithy, like, you know.
Ba-ba-ba.
I can remember that.
It's got a rhythm. Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah.
Some of them are really silly, too.
What's that, like Farmer's Almanac? Old Ben's Almanac?
Yeah. Yes. A lot of them don't make sense. I was actually spending time in the wisdom literature this morning preparation. I was reading some of them, and I'm like, they're like little two-liners, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of
couplets,
them do not appear to be related at all, which is...
A lot of them make you go, what did I just read?
You lost it on the second line. Yeah. You had one job.
If you just stopped. Yeah. But no, you had to. All right, so let's jump into Proverbs here a little bit. I think, you know, aside from the bad joke of Proverbs being our opposite of amateur nouns, what do you know about the book of Proverbs? Let's start there.
I know that it's mostly attributed to Solomon. Mm-hmm. He may or may not have written it himself.
Whether or not that's correct,
sure.
That's who
everything
we typically
gets attributed to Solomon.
That's right. Or David.
He was out doing the most, apparently. But he was sort of a collector of wisdom literature from different cultures, not even just Judaism, from what I understand. So he's sort of like the founding father of this tradition of wisdom literature in Judaism.
Yeah. Do you remember that story? I think we covered this story in the first King or in the Kings episode because we did Kings together. Do you remember this at all? So Solomon asks God asks Solomon, what do you want me to give you? Like, I'm going to bless your kingdom. What do you want me to give? And Solomon thinks for a while And he says, God, I want wisdom. Mm-hmm. And God's like, oh, that's such a good answer. I'm not only going to give you wisdom, but I'm going to give you all this other stuff too, because right. I'm so proud of you. And so he has become like this central figurehead mm-hmm. of all wisdom that stems from the Jewish tradition. And so, he's absolutely kind of attributed to this. We don't think that he wrote all of it. That seems right. In fact, other parts are claimed by others, right? They're named by other people. But we definitely think that it's kind of pointing back to him. So there are these three general sections that we have of Proverbs that's important for us to realize. We've got chapters 1 through 9, chapters 10 to 29, and then the last two chapters, mm-hmm. 30 and 31. 1 through 9 are really kind of an introduction. We're going to get into that a little bit more in a little bit. 10 to 29 are the bulk of what we think of as Proverbs, right? When you're thinking of those little zingers, that's chapters 10 all to 29. Right there. And then the end is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. It's got some, and Proverbs 31, I'm excited to have some conversation with you. I had an anticipation you might have some feelings about Proverbs 31. So we'll get into that. We will bookmark some extra time for that conversation. But chapters 1 through 9, or sorry, chapters 1 through 1, verse 1 through 9. That's what I was trying to get mm-hmm. at, is like the introduction to the whole thing, right? And so we get this idea of wisdom, and we want to understand the Hebrew understanding of wisdom, or the Hebrew chokhmah, which I'm sure that I'm not saying correctly, but that's fine. We'll say it. Uh-huh, exactly. And you know, when we think of wisdom in our culture, what do you think most people are what do you think of when you think of wisdom? Or let me ask it another way. Who is a wise person? By your standards.
Ooh, by my standards?
Yeah. Who does Elise McCarter define as that person is wise? And what about them makes them wise?
I guess somebody who's able to parse through information and make good decisions based on varying sources of information.
Yeah. Input. So I appreciate that, because I think the fact that you include the make good decisions puts you more in line with the Hebrew frame of mind of what we're thinking about than most... what I would say most Americans would say, right?
Sure.
Most of us say like, oh, wisdom means you know stuff.
Right.
You know, and maybe you
just
know.
Just knowledge.
Right, yeah. It's just like, oh, I've got so much wisdom because I know all this stuff, right? I can come into a room, I can just like, ooh, here's this information that I have. But it's not necessarily about the application of that wisdom to how you live in mm-hmm. the world. And that is really central to this Hebrew understanding, that all of Proverbs, all the wisdom that we're talking about in Proverbs is intended for us to apply it to life. And so, in fact, we use the same word to talk about the skilled artisans who build the tabernacle back in the Exodus period of time, right? So it's not just that they know how to do it, it's that they can actually do this thing with their hands. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to make these crafts. And so wisdom is supposed to be this same kind of thing, that it's not just something we have in our head, but it's something that we learn to use with our hands, and it affects our daily life. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of where this introduction is going. And it links this with this understanding of fear of the Lord, or fear of God. Have you and I talked about fear of God? I know that Patrick and I have talked about fear of God in the past.
I don't think so.
Okay. So let's do some Elise McCarter. Fear of God. How does that strike you? What do you hear when you think about that sort of thing?
So I guess my understanding of it has probably changed in recent years. I used to think it was, you know, legitimate, like fear you know, should be like a healthy respect of, which I think is a piece of it. But I think it's more of a understanding of my place in the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. From this perspective, it's much more about a reverence, right? Mm-hmm. It's an awareness of I am not God.
Right.
And God is.
Right.
And so, you know, in the same way that you might, you know, we don't use this language, but you could have a fear of your parents, which would be an appropriate thing to have, to say, I'm not the parent in this, you know, right? I'm not in charge in my household. When I'm a 5-year-old, I'm not in charge.
Right.
I don't make the decisions. I don't, you know, tell us where we're going on vacation. That's a healthy fear of your parents. It is not meant that you should be like trembling in anxiety and I don't know what.
Yeah, now it's, more, I can't it's just an understanding.
Terror,
right?
Terror would be the word. Yeah. And so we are going to hear that language of fear of God, or fear of the Lord, a lot throughout Proverbs. We just have to be ready that that's not necessarily what immediately comes to mind. We're using a word from another context and putting it into our own. So the rest of that intro then becomes 10 speeches. This is all still chapters 1 through 9. It becomes 10 speeches from a father to the son, where we are supposed to listen to wisdom and we're warned against folly. And both of these are depicted as women. And wisdom is...
Yep.
I didn't write the book of Proverbs.
We're only
right?
teaching the boys anyway, right?
Well, I'm not going to say that.
It's okay.
I don't think that's
the
what
ladies get one at the end. The it lady, stinks, the, but we get it.
No, I don't think it stinks as much as you think it does. Anyway, all right, we'll get there. We have bookmarked extra time for that, but we're still in chapters 1 through 9.
Right.
So we want to listen to Lady Wisdom, who's throwing this huge party and says everyone's invited, which is really important. We'll come back to that. And we're not going to listen to Lady Folly, which is generously connected to a lady of the night.
Maybe.
I don't know what an appropriate way to say that would be. But
it works.
She's an adulteress, right? Yeah. She is trying to lure you away from that which is good and lure you into something which is not. And that is connected with those acts. So there we go. And so we get this challenge that happens between these two, and we get this passing down from the father to son, and that's where it all kind of starts. And so we have to remember at this point that wisdom literature is not meant to be law, and it's not meant to be prophecy. And I think that is where we often make our first mistake.
Yep.
Because we look at Proverbs and we say, oh, it says do this. Mm-hmm. That means I have to do that.
Right.
Or we look at Proverbs and says, oh, if I do this, then I will get that. Yeah. And that is not the purpose of Proverbs.
No.
There are a couple great ones here that we're going to get to in a few minutes. But I think just starting from this place, we have to remember that is not what this is intended to do.
Yeah.
That ultimately it's more about accumulating this insight of God's people over the generations. And so just like you might gather with your family at Thanksgiving or at the holidays, right? And you hear the stories of the ages. Yep. We don't do this as often anymore, I don't think. My family doesn't do this as often anymore. Some families might. But in a lot of cultures, right, you come together on those holidays and you're hearing those stories. And it's not that they're telling you these stories so that you just are entertained. It's that they want you to learn from these stories. They want you to say, here are the mistakes and the things that have gone right for our family in the past. Now we want you to go forth and do better. Mm-hmm. And Proverbs is kind of saying like, hey, here's all this knowledge that your people have amassed over these hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Go forth and do better and live more in line with the kingdom that God has for you. So when you hear Proverbs in that context, what's kind of your reaction to the whole setup of the book?
I mean, I think it makes a lot more sense in that context, right? Versus, I mean, if you, and we're going to get into it, but a lot of these are like, the days of the wicked will be foreshortened and the righteous will live forever, whatever. Yeah. You're like, okay, but except that doesn't happen that way most of the time. So I think, you know, just reading it and understanding it as like, this is a good way to live. Things are more likely to go well for you if you do these things. Makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and say I'm stealing directly from the Bible Project material.
Oh, I watched it too.
So this piece is particularly, I mean, this framework for the book, I mean, is particularly helpful, I think, that, right, we put this in the context of Proverbs is giving you one piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to tie that piece of the puzzle in with the pieces that are provided by Ecclesiastes and with the pieces that are included by Job. And then we're getting a more full picture. Mm-hmm. If we're taking Proverbs on its own, we're going to end up with this very, very skewed but very positive sense of the world, like, oh, if I just do all this stuff, I'm gonna get everything's gonna be great. And then something's not gonna be great.
Yep.
And we're gonna be like,
what did I do?
Yeah. What did I do wrong? Yep. Or this book is not faithful, or God is not faithful, right? Or God is not real, right? Which I think is where a lot of our modern faith falls, especially when we start looking to Proverbs. Right? Mm-hmm. If the first thing people start quoting to me from scripture is Proverbs, we're in a different conversation, right? Because if that's where you start, you're missing a whole lot of other stuff that feeds into this book as well. And so it's not meant for that, but there is some fun stuff. And so I'm going to read a couple of favorites that I found here. Yep. Right. So these are two, both about children.
No.
Because we both have kids.
We do have kids.
I feel like that would be valuable. So Proverbs 22, verse 6, start children off on the way they should go. And even when they are old, they will not turn from it.
Okay.
Seems good, right?
Seems good.
Teach a kid, you know, teach a kid good manners and they're always going to be polite. We have zero evidence to suggest that that's not going to work, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. There's the issue that your kids are your own people and they're going to be who they're going to be.
Yeah,
but,
right. Yeah. But it's a good premise, right? Yeah. And so, okay, we're going to get into that a little bit. Proverbs 13:24, those who spare the rod hate their children, but those who love them are careful to discipline them.
So you should be spanking all the time.
Well, see, it says you should discipline. It does not say spank or hit or, you know, anything of that nature. But I mean, I think discipline is appropriate, right? Discipline's important for kids. We need that. But again, I think these two highlight what we're going to see throughout this, and we'll come back to this. Mm-hmm. But Proverbs are about probabilities and not about guarantees.
Yep.
And so we're going to come back to that idea, but probabilities, not guarantees. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before the fall.
Ooh.
I know a lot of prideful people who have not fallen.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Proverbs 20, verse 1, wine is a mocker and beer a brawler. Whoever is led astray by them is not wise. That one, that might be true. That's probably just a good one. Okay, just keep that one in your back pocket.
Hydrate.
Proverbs 18, this one will lead into our conversation a little later. 18, verse 22, he who finds a wife finds what is good and receives favor from the Lord.
Okay, sure.
If that's what
you're looking for.
If we're on the basis of probabilities, I think when you find a healthy relationship in which you're committed to another individual, yeah, that's good. But that doesn't mean that can't go badly, yep. right? That you have arrived. Right, yeah. It doesn't mean that you can't end up in a relationship where it's not what you thought it was or where, you know, whatever, it's just a bad relationship. And it doesn't mean that you can't find that, you can't find what is good on your own.
Right.
Both of those things are also true. But it's this idea that we play about probabilities and not guarantees or not promises, right? Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, the most dangerous part for us about the book of Proverbs is that we look to Proverbs and say, These are promises. We make that transactional equation. If this is true, then this is also going to be true. Yeah. And then when it's not, it really falls short, and we get discouraged.
Yep.
And that's not what it's about. We have to ultimately look to the broader picture that's going to be presented to us in Ecclesiastes as well. But before we get there, let's talk about Proverbs 31. Let's dive in.
What do you want to say about it?
Tell me what you know about Proverbs 31.
Proverbs 31. So I would venture to guess that pretty much any woman that's been involved in the church for a minute has been
or two has been
exposed to some sort of Bible study on
the
so-called Proverbs 31 woman.
Yeah. So what do you know about the Proverbs 31 woman?
So these days, very little, because I avoid it. Being very honest, I think I went through a couple of those and just said, this is not computing for me at all. I'm not rising at dawn. I'm not making bread with my bare hands while the chickens crow or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, like it's not.
I don't know why not. Right. We could have been feeding the bears and, you know, it would have been great.
Yeah. Feed the bears.
I'm pretty sure that's in there. The woman who makes bread and feeds the bears.
Yeah.
So the background to this Proverbs 31 woman is what I think makes it valuable for us.
Okay.
I think, because there's a movement, like you can go to like Proverbs 31 wife or something like, or 31 woman or something. I don't remember what the website is. But.
You know, I think that my issue with it is it ends up being like a set of, not that it is this, but the way that it is presented is it's a set of rules of things you should do as a wife to please your spouse.
Yes.
And I don't like that very much.
That is perfectly reasonable because that is in the modern context, within the modern like stream of how this has been pulled out. I think that is how it is often presented. And it is not intended to be that. I mean, there is a level of that, right? But it's not intended to be just that. That really, right? So if we remember, the book starts with this story of a father passing on stories to a son. Mm-hmm. The book ends with this mother passing on a story to her son. And the mother is, you know, kind of this lady wisdom figure of saying, what does it mean for women to live and to live in this world of wisdom? And in our context, right, in the 21st century, we look at that and we're like, oh, man, that's like 1950s stuff or 1850s stuff in some cases.
Family
right?
propaganda.
Yeah, but I think it's much more about how do we, as people and as women, how do we live wisely in this world? And so while the modern movement might not be your or my favorite thing, I think there is a lot of value to Proverbs 31 in wrapping up the book as a whole, because it begins with this message from a father to a son saying, look for Lady Wisdom. And then it ends with this son receiving a message from his mother saying, look, this is what Lady Wisdom really is all about. And I'm demonstrating Lady Wisdom for you. And I think there's an opportunity for us to enter into that kind of relationship and be demonstrating wisdom for our children as well.
Sure.
And I don't know. The Proverbs 31 movement, I could take or leave. But I think there's good stuff in Proverbs 31. But
you're probably
I'm going to end with this question, or end this section with this question. Is Proverbs too simple?
I mean, I think not when it's surrounded by like the other wisdom literature or a healthy understanding of context. I think if that's the only thing that you have exposure to, or it's not presented to you with the context, then
I think that's the right challenge, right? Mm-hmm. I think that if we're holding it within the larger context, we know, okay, this provides one perspective, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I know that the first Lord of the Rings book is only the first book. And so when it ends, I know that there's more coming.
Right.
But we don't read Proverbs that way.
Right.
We read Proverbs like, oh, here's this funny thing that I can pull out and I know that I'm allowed to beat my child, right? No, that's not what Proverbs is about. That's not what it's saying. And so when we read it in that context, I think that Proverbs is dangerously simple when we misread it, right?
Yep.
And because it's not narrative in a linear sense, right? It doesn't move through like Exodus or like Kings or anything like that. It's, you know, very easy to just pull things out, even more so than other parts of scriptures. It's like, oh yeah, here's a verse, because it's written that way. It's very easy for us to oversimplify that and to to brush over the very real facts of our life that the opposite of all these things happen, right? There are plenty of kids who are started off on good paths who end up far, far away from where their parents would like them.
Right.
And there are plenty of kids who are heavily disciplined as children who do not benefit from it, right?
Right.
And, you know, there are plenty of prideful people who don't go into destruction, and there are plenty mm-hmm. of people, you know, all we can find opposites to every proverb that's yep. in there, which is why that context probability, not promises, mm-hmm. I think is so helpful for us yep. to keep in there. So Ecclesiastes. Let's move on. That's our next section of this wisdom mm-hmm. literature. We're not going to get into Job because we already did Job yep. and its own thing. You can go and find that at beyondsundaypodcast.com. Whole mm-hmm. episode on Job. It was great. I'm speaking without having listened to it. I just assumed
right.
that it was awesome because we do good stuff. But Ecclesiastes, we're going to start with the Qohelet because that's fun to say.
Qohelet.
The Qohelet. So Ecclesiastes, the teacher. Qohelet is a word we're not really sure what it's supposed to mean. Mm-hmm. That's the simplest way to say it, but it means like one who gathers, and so we often translate it as teacher, and so we refer to it as the teacher. We don't know who this Qohelet is. They claim it's the son of David, but we don't know. Could be Solomon.
Probably gets attributed to Solomon
right.
again.
Come on out. Let's make it Solomon again. Right. He was the son of David. Could have been one of David's other sons. Mm-hmm. Could be somebody who was way later with no connection to David, but who's writing something within the vein of this Solomonic tradition. Mm-hmm. I might have just made Solomonic.
Solomonic.
But it sounds good.
I like
right?
it, yeah.
Harmonic. Writing within that vein and that line of thinking. In any case, that's where Ecclesiastes comes from. And I'll say this. Bible Project had an interesting way of framing these that I think were helpful. And so I'm going to offer this mm-hmm. as a perspective. So Proverbs, they said, all right, let's imagine that Proverbs is this young, insightful teacher who's just super inspired and less positive about everything. Like, yeah, here's wisdom. It's woven mm-hmm. through all of creation. Go chase after it. That's Proverbs. Yep. And Ecclesiastes is like the middle-aged person who's, you know, I've seen some life.
A little salty.
I've seen yeah. some stuff. And I'm like, listen up. Let me call it back yeah. just a little bit. And then we get into Job, who's, you know, salty on salty. But
right.
So that's kind of this Ecclesiastes perspective. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a lot of things. We're like, yeah, there's good stuff. There are things that are good, but it's all meaningless.
Yeah. Or it's all an enigma, depending yeah. on the translation, yeah. which I vastly prefer.
Excellent, excellent point, which is yep. actually the next point we're going to get into. So it starts with this very famous verse. This is Ecclesiastes 1, verse 2, where mm-hmm. it starts with, and it, depending on what translation you look at, it's like meaningless, meaningless. All of life is meaningless. Nothing means anything. Mm-hmm. Something along those lines. But if you look at the NIV, it mm-hmm. uses meaningless. If you look at the NRSV, which mm-hmm. is what we typically use here at Lord of Life on a Sunday morning, it says vanity. So vanity of vanity, all is vanity.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Contemporary English Bible, it says perfectly pointless.
Pointless.
Mm-hmm. If you look
in
at
every
the...
it's like Mary Poppins.
Exactly.
Perfectly pointless in every way.
Man, that would be a great like a parody yeah. of Mary Poppins if she was perfectly pointless in every way. Anyway. The New American Standard Bible translated as futility of futilities. Mm-hmm. The Message, I think, comes closest to what we were talking about and what you and I are kind of hinting at here mm-hmm. with this idea of smoke. Mm-hmm. Everything is smoke. The Bible Project uses this imagery of smoke as well, which I found very enlightening and helpful for this. The word here is hevel. Mm-hmm. It's a Hebrew word. It probably has a little bit more of a to it, but
sure.
that I couldn't quite get right. out, but that's okay. For once in my life, I'm not like completely congested from allergies, so I'm just going to enjoy yeah. that for the moment.
You'll do it not on purpose
right,
next time.
Yeah, exactly. So hevel is the word that we're getting, and hevel is used 38 times, or hevel, or it's a derivative, right? Mm-hmm. It's used 38 times in a very short book, right? Ecclesiastes is
yeah.
not that long.
Yeah.
So for one book or one word to be used that time, it's very crucial here. And one way to think about it, right, we get this idea of meaningless or vanity, and those have a lot of English baggage,
mm-hmm.
right? Vanity, we're thinking like, oh, well, it's just like I'm doing it just for myself,
yeah.
or meaningless, well, it doesn't matter at all, right?
Yeah.
And neither of those really capture what this right. is at. You use the word
enigma yeah.
which is really helpful. Paradox is another mm-hmm. one that I think we can get at, right? That all these things that are being described cannot be fully understood,
mm-hmm.
right? One of the reasons that we think about smoke, right, you can look at smoke and you're like, oh, that looks solid, and then you reach out and you try to grab it and mm-hmm. it, you know, goes right through your hands, or
yeah.
it's immediately changing shape even before your eyes, or
yep.
you know, like watching a cloud. Did you ever like do the thing where you lay out and you watch the clouds and you're like, oh, there's a bear or there's
yeah.
a dinosaur, right? And like one minute it's a dinosaur and the next minute you're looking at the same cloud and suddenly
mm-hmm.
it's a rocket ship and now suddenly it's a ballerina,
right.
Now, right? That's the same kind of idea, that this thing is shifting before us all the time, and that an attempt to fully understand that, an attempt to imagine that we can fully grasp what is happening around us, that's actually the part that is not worth our time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that life is meaningless. It's the attempt to fully understand everything that's around us.
Yep.
Is not going to benefit us, is not going to land us where we want it to. So from an opening, you know, what do you know about Ecclesiastes? How did, you know, reading this again, how did this kind of change your view of the book or anything like that? What do you think?
I mean, I guess I was surprised at how much I ended up appreciating Ecclesiastes, because mm-hmm. I thought of it as kind of depressing, because, you know, you get the meaningless, everything is meaningless. You're like, okay, great.
Thanks a lot.
Right, I'm going to go back to Proverbs. Right. It gives me some hope. Concrete, I can do this.
That's right,
know?
Yeah.
But I kind of appreciate like that leaning into this, you know, enigma that not everything is the way that it seems, or two people can look at the same thing and see very different things, mm-hmm. you know, and I really like that sort of acceptance and calling out of the gray area.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for me, this was kind of like my college experience, right? So I went to college, you know, young, wide-eyed, church is great, gonna, sure. you know, work for Jesus, love it, and everything's Jesus. Great. I wanted to work in a church. I knew right. that. Yeah. So, you know, everything's great. And then I took a class called The Power of Evil.
Oh.
And it, you know, it was basically a whole class on what the technical term would be theodicy, right? But like, why does evil exist? If God is all loving and God is all powerful, why is there evil?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you take a whole class like that for a semester, and you read about Christian pastors who wrote in support of the Holocaust. You read about mm-hmm. How Christianity was used to support apartheid and all these other things. Like, yeah. And you're like, oh man. This is,
yeah.
And you come out, like, if you come out as good as Ecclesiastes come out of this, mm-hmm. you did pretty well.
Right.
Right. And so at some point you have your eyes open to the realities of the world around us, that not everything is great and things yeah. can't be good all the time. And, yeah. and things are completely out of our control. And that lack of control, I think, is ultimately what Ecclesiastes is driving at, that the mm-hmm. best thing we can do for our life is to understand that we're not in control.
Right.
And to stop trying.
To accept it.
Yeah.
Right.
Accept yeah. that you are not in control. Yeah. Stop trying to be in control and experience life as it comes, which yeah. is actually it's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah. I mean, I think
for a salty middle-aged, you know, professor who's coming in being like, shut up, young, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty nice. That's a nice place to come out. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, just accept yeah. it. Anyway.
I mean, there's a saying, it's one of my favorites, that, you know, happiness is derived from accepting things as they are and not the way that you think that they should be, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which is, mm-hmm. you know, may or may not be somewhere scattered in wisdom literature to some extent.
Wisdom literature of somebody, I'm sure.
Right, yeah. yeah. But I really appreciate that. You know, I've found that to be true, is, you know, if you can accept things for what they are,
yeah,
you're a lot more likely to be happy than yeah. trying to make things match up to what you think they should mm-hmm. be.
Which I think is really something that, if we want to look at something that we can apply to life, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking for that biblical point of, well, how do I take this and apply it to my...
From Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
In particular.
Yeah, I was getting there.
Okay. Sorry. I thought you meant in general from the Bible, if there's one point.
No, but I think every time we read the Bible, that's what we're mm-hmm. looking for, right? Anytime we read scripture, one of the faults that we often bring is, mm-hmm. how do I take this and pull it to my life? And scripture is not always going to do that for us very right. well. And if you read just like a little bit of Ecclesiastes at a time, or you like say like, oh, just go read these couple of verses, you're not necessarily going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read the whole context of Ecclesiastes and the whole picture, I think you can walk away with, okay, how, you know, what would be a mantra or an experience that I could bring that would allow me to realize that I'm out of control, right? How mm-hmm. how can I step into that? It's a very Eastern religion kind of headspace. It's not really in line with a lot of our Western thought,
yeah.
But I think it's really helpful and really frames out the context of Proverbs as well, because there is wisdom, and even the Kohelet, right, the teacher, will say like, yeah, wisdom and you know, that fear of the Lord, that's all good, but it's also smoke, right? Mm-hmm. If you're just chasing that, you're going to find all those exceptions. You're going to yeah. find all those things that we said, oh yeah, people are prideful and don't have a fall all the time, and mm-hmm. wicked prosper. And you're going to encounter that if that's all that you're chasing. Eventually yep. you have to let go of control. And to do that, the author is going to set up these kind of two bookends over the middle section, which I think are really valuable. And it starts with this piece about time and ends with a piece about death. And so to start, we get Ecclesiastes 1:11. The people of long ago are not remembered, nor will there be any remembrance of people yet to come by those who come after them.
Bleak, bleak, bleak.
Yeah. Pretty bleak.
Yeah.
But also like, yeah, time.
But
you,
sure.
you are a blip, right? Yeah. I don't know. Have you ever seen those things where it like does like the scale of the history of the world? Where it's like, you know, if you were on a football field and, you know, the Big Bang was mm-hmm. at like the goal line of one end, and then you like spaced everything out equally. Mm-hmm. Like we would be in the last like millimeter of the other other line, right? We think we have this huge expanse of time, but even the hundreds of thousands of years that people have been around, I think that's right, hundreds of thousands. But even in that amount of time, it's, you know, millimeters in that, you know, in that large expanse. And so, you know, if we shrink that down to my 80, 90, 100, if I'm lucky, years, right? I mean, that's even a blip of a blip of a blip of a blip, right? And so framing ourselves within that context, it's bleak, but it's also really helpful when we're trying to remember that we're not in control, that there's something larger. So that's where we start. We start with there. And then we close with this idea about death, and death ultimately being the great equalizer.
Yep.
Because everybody gonna die.
Yep.
I mean, that's ultimately the point. Right. The quote here, Ecclesiastes 12:5, because all must go to their eternal home and the mourners will go about the streets. Everybody's going to die, right? Mm-hmm. Rich, poor, you're both going to die.
Yep.
Wise, unwise, both going to die. Male, female, you know, well-educated, poorly educated, working hard, business person, politician, warlord, whatever. Everybody's going to be dead.
Yep.
And so, you know, if that is the great equalizer, you know, if we hold that in the context of death itself is out of our control.
Yep.
Which I think is our great, great sin of the 21st century, is that beginning to think that death is within our control.
Oh.
I think this is a piece
That's
of
interesting.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, did we talk about this on the podcast? No, I don't think we did. But who's the, is it Bezos? I think it was Bezos. Along with other people are like investing in this process to try to find the genetic code to essentially make them immortal.
Sure. Because if there's anybody we want to be immortal, it's Jeff Bezos.
It's the people who can fund that kind of research, right? Right. So, I mean, there is this idea all around us that we can control death. Mm-hmm. There's a joke that I heard once. As I think maybe I've said this on the podcast before. I don't know. It's been a long time. But okay. What's the difference between God and a doctor? God knows he's not a doctor. And like, you know, there's this element of we can do anything we can to stave off death. We can give ourselves, we can just find the right medicine. Yep. We can just do the right exercise routine. We can just do the right nutrition, or we can just drive safer, or we can just, you know, and all those things are good, right? I'm not against any of that.
Sure.
But we still have to be aware everybody is going to die.
Right.
And tragically, some of us are going to die far sooner than we would, than we would want them to.
Yeah.
And some of us are going to live a long time. And some of the people we live a long time would be people we'd prefer to have died a long time ago, which is probably a horrible way to say that, but you know what I'm getting, you know? And the sooner that we accept that that is a part of it,
I
think the better off we will be, because again, we're not in control.
Yeah. I actually find that last section about death less bleak than the opening section about time.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Yeah. Why? To say more about that.
I guess I appreciate the knowledge of mortality for how it allows me to live versus the nobody's going to remember you just feels kind of rude. But I mean, you know, anything could kill you at any time, right? There's literally no guarantees. So in a way, that's kind of freeing. Like there's no point in living your life scared of death.
Yeah.
Because it's going to happen anyway, even if you're scared of it.
Right.
So,
which, you know, you look at the world we live in. I think that's an important thing for us to hold in its proper context. Because what has happened is that same perspective has been used against, you know, medical science to say, like, oh, well, I'm not afraid of death, so I don't have to wear a mask, or I don't have to get a vaccine or whatever. And I don't think that's an appropriate reading of Ecclesiastes either. I don't think the author of Ecclesiastes would say, you are not in control, so don't try to take a vaccine or don't try to wear a mask.
Yeah.
I think we're saying you're not in control. So let's stop making that your reason for doing anything.
Right.
Right. And just take that out of the equation.
Yeah.
You know, and if death is not in the equation, then what are we aiming for? And how do we love our neighbors? How do we care for our neighbors? And, you know, getting back to some of that wisdom that we would pull from Proverbs. So ultimately, we're going to come down here on kind of a broad theme that life's true meaning is found in God's judgment, which probably sounds kind of harsh.
It does. Yep.
So, I mean, you're having a reaction here. So
judgment was not the word.
Not like hives or anything.
Judgment was not the word I thought you were going to come in with.
Okay. So what do you think I was going to come in with?
I guess I thought you were going to come back with fear of God again. But yeah, say more about God's judgment.
Yeah. So I think, you know, life's true meaning is that ultimately all this hevel, right? All this smoke and this uncertainty, mm-hmm. all these things, this will all be brought before God's judgment and will ultimately be wiped away.
Mm-hmm.
That the final promise, right? If we're looking towards what's ultimately going to come, is that God's justice, mm-hmm. right? Which is brought forth through God's judgment, is going to wipe all of that away. And that's that hope. It's that hope of God's future promise that fuels our life now. And mm-hmm. so I live now as if God has already brought that promise to fruition.
Yeah.
Particularly as a Christian, I live that way because, you know, Jesus has already come and died. And so I believe that piece of the promise is mm-hmm. already fulfilled. But so we live now as though God's judgment has already been brought full. And so we, as Christians, you know, living in this world, can look at Ecclesiastes and say, yeah, all things are smoke. And yeah, I am completely out of control of everything, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we accept that that's okay, that I'm not in control of everything. And we still live in a way that's in line with God's justice, because even if I'm out of control, I know that that's what's right. I know that that's what fuels me, because that's what ultimately God is going to bring about. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not in my lifetime, even if it's not in my kid's lifetime, that's what God is about. And mm-hmm. so that's what I want to be about.
I like it. That's more of like a positive view of judgment too.
Yeah.
Than typically
yes.
we associate with that.
Right. Because judgment, again, this is just like how we thought of all those other words. All right. Judgment has all this baggage that mm-hmm. comes with it in our culture of, like, you know, the courtroom slapping down the hammer and saying, okay, off to prison, right? Yeah. Nobody goes to court and gets judged. And, well, I mean, I guess people do get acquitted, but,
sure.
you know, nobody gets judged and you're like, oh yeah, everything's great. Like mm-hmm. judgment is always bad.
Yep.
And that's not what judgment is, right? We pass judgments on things all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? If I go to a restaurant and I say, this was delicious, that's a judgment.
Judgment, yep.
Right? And so we have to reframe our understanding of judgment. God's judgment is about bringing about God's justice
mm-hmm.
and wiping away those things which are not in line with God's justice, which doesn't mean death, destruction, hellfire, etc. It doesn't mean that either, mm-hmm. but it does mean wiping those away so that all people experience the life that's promised in Revelation, which we haven't gotten to yet.
Someday. Eventually we might.
I don't know. We're still in the Old Testament. It could be a while. But we get to the final pages of Revelation, and we see that, you know, God's going to live among God's people. He's going to mm-hmm. wipe the tear from every eye. Death will be no more. Mourning mm-hmm. itself will be destroyed. Right? And that's the kind of vision that we live in hope of. And so we hold Ecclesiastes within that larger context, not mm-hmm. just of the larger wisdom literature, but within the framework of God's universal hope for all people.
I like it.
I'm out of breath.
Right.
That was a lot. Anything you want to say to wrap up our conversation about wisdom literature?
I liked the experience of reading Proverbs and Ecclesiastes back to back this time, which mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done that before.
Sure.
So it's fun to see, like, this, oh, you know, do this, not that. Sleep a lot and you'll be poor.
Yeah.
You know, blah, 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 blah. That was one of my favorites.
Sleep a lot and you'll be poor.
Yeah. I was like, what? Come on.
Unless you learn how to invest.
Right. Be a day trader.
That's right.
And you can do both. The author probably didn't foresee that
right.
eventuality. Yeah.
I don't think day trading was a thing in ancient world.
Or being an influencer.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's that, and then there's this move into, you know, like you said, it's a little saltier, a little bit more grounded, like everything is an enigma. You can't figure stuff out, you know, and there's not a whole lot of point in resting on being able to figure stuff out.
Right.
You know, your knowledge is not going to fix it.
Yeah.
So it was a fun sort of back and forth between those two.
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, I've read about wisdom literature, and I've read about, you know, these books being part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time that I've really heard and seen them connected in this direct of a sense. Mm-hmm. Not that they're written to be together, but they're written to provide different frames of the same picture. And that was incredibly valuable for me, just, you know, coming to it from a new frame again to see it in that way. And so I think I want to do this. We're going to do our book ratings, which we haven't done yet.
Oh,
but we're going to first rate them individually.
Okay.
And then we're going to see if our ratings change if we rate them. Like, if we imagine them as one book, what our ratings change. All right. So Proverbs first on its own.
Oh,
I'm going straight.
You're harsh. Yeah,
I'm harsh.
I'm one and a half.
One and a half. I'm going halvesies.
Yeah.
Which we just realized we did this big dramatic reveal
and nobody
super ineffective on a podcast, but that's okay. So I'm going halvesies because I just think it's so easily misused, and I've just seen it poorly used a lot. So I give it halvesies when it's on its own.
Okay.
Do you want to say anything about yours, or just leave it at that?
So I do one and a half because I think it's an easy read for one thing. I think it's easy to remember. You mm-hmm. kind of get the gist of stuff really easily. So, like, it's easily transferred to something practical.
Yeah. Okay.
So I appreciate it for that.
Again, I get that.
If Ben Franklin or Aesop
Absolutely.
Wrote the Bible, This is their jam.
I don't know. If Aesop wrote it, there'd be a whole lot more animals that were talking to me in it, probably.
Sure. It is missing animals. Maybe it's just one thumb.
We need talking animals. Yeah. That's what we need. All right. So let's write Ecclesiastes on its own.
Ecclesiastes on its own.
I'm going to go with a solid 1.5 on Ecclesiastes.
That's probably one for Ecclesiastes.
One for Ecclesiastes. Yeah. Okay. Nice. Yeah. You want to say anything about that?
It's just a little bit of a Debbie Downer.
I
prefer the less depressing books.
I live
Bible.
Into the Debbie Downer
I
nature.
Know you do.
It's part of my jam.
Right. It's like the Johnny Cash of pastors.
I've been called worse. I will take the Johnny Cash of pastors. Yeah, I will wear that as a badge of honor.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is, but it's in there somewhere. All right. So if you were to put these books together, if you were to imagine them as Proverbiastes, I can't even Ecclesiverbs. If you were to imagine them as Ecclesiverbs,
Ecclesiverbs.
Would your ratings change? How would you rate them if you saw them?
Probably.
As a whole picture?
Yeah. I would say. Closer to two thumbs, maybe.
Yeah. It really boosts.
Kind of love them together.
It really boosts
yeah.
Proverbs rating for yeah. me. Like, Ecclesiastes really rounds out that Proverbs. Mm-hmm. And I think if we read them together in that intentional way, it prevents us from a lot of the misuse and abuse of Proverbs yeah. that has happened. And I think that would be even greater if we did this in the context of Job, too, because Job takes it to, like, that ultimate extreme.
Yeah.
Going way off the other deep end.
I didn't realize that Job was wisdom literature either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Job is one of those weird ones where it kind of depends on which tradition you're coming from. Like, okay. If they're going to always classify it as wisdom literature, some people will say, no, Job is history.
Okay.
This thing happened.
This is an account.
This is an account yeah. of something that happened.
Yeah.
And where nobody says that about Proverbs, right? Or,
right.
I mean, they're not written to be that way.
Yeah.
But I think a wisdom literature reading of Job is a healthier reading of that situation.
That feels right.
Because there's no evidence that we know the conversation that God has with Satan. So how did that get written down?
Right.
No,
it feels like a stretch. Yeah,
it does. Anyway. Yeah. So yeah. So that those are our ratings. Do we want to do any typecasting? I don't think there's, I mean, I guess we could try to cast the Qohelet, but that
did we typecast Solomon or Dreamcast Solomon?
We did. Well, I think, we put Rob Lowe, and then Patrick yelled at me that Robert Lowe was not appropriate, but that's who I chose for Solomon.
Why would he not be appropriate for Solomon?
Because Patrick said that Rob Lowe was too old. And I said,
excuse you.
Exactly. Rob Lowe is ageless, sir.
All right, now that we've gotten our feelings Rob Lowe out of the way.
Unlike the book of Ecclesiastes, right. We should point out that Rob Lowe is also going to die.
Right.
All right, I think that about wraps it up. Mm-hmm. All yeah. right, so with that, if you enjoyed this episode, you can find this and all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can write in, let us know your favorite proverb, or let us know why you're, I don't know, whatever else you want to let us know. Write in at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, follow us on Facebook at Beyond Sunday Podcast.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.